And welcome to a bonus class today. This is actually an audio of a class that I presented to a group of single adults where we had a fascinating discussion about the importance of relationships and particularly the importance of conversations in those relationships, how they are key to how the difference between healthy relationships and unhealthy relationships. And in a fascinating twist, it turns out that the entire plan of salvation rests on relationships and our conversations with God and what those conversations do for us to help us. And wanted to include that in this class. So enjoy this bonus class. I think you're going to find it interesting. We certainly did. Thanks for joining. And welcome to another Monday morning Book of Mormon class with Kevin Hinckley. Recorded live, we dive deeply and deliberately into this inspired scripture. How far we get in one class depends a lot on the material and the doctrines left for us by ancient prophets. A single chapter may occupy one class or many. Of course, opinions expressed by the teacher or the class members do not constitute official church doctrines. Join us in this adventure and discover the hidden treasures found within its pages. And now, on to the class. So, with that said, we'll go ahead and get started tonight. I want to start in kind of an interesting place, if I can. There's a prominent scholar in the church by the name of Terrell Givens, who recently is a professor at the Maxwell Institute at BYU. And there was a man that came from Oxford out to BYU and specifically to the church, and he had a lot of questions. And so he sat down with Brother Givens. Brother Givens took him out to dinner, and he says, you know, why the interest in Mormonism? What is there about us that you wanted to come all to talk to members of the church? And he said, you know what? I started reading through your doctrines, and I found that, and I have deep interest in the Cappadocian Fathers. And Brother Givens went, oh, yeah, the Cappadocian Fathers. Yeah, that was the key. All right, awesome. Okay. You guys remember the Cappadocian Fathers, right? No. I figured that would be the case. Here, this is really cool. You should know about the Cappadocian Fathers. Cappadocia is a little town in Turkey, and it's honeycombed with all these caves and stuff like that. And in those caves, in the first couple of centuries, there were a number of church fathers, those early writers and understanders like Origen and Athanasian, stuff like that. There were some great fathers that taught doctrine prior to the establishment of the church under Constantine. Okay, does that make sense? First couple of centuries. And one of the things that that he said, that, and one of the things that captured him about the Cappadocian Fathers is here in essence is what they taught. The gods created this earth and mankind as a divine nursery to raise up peers that could be equal to them. That's what they were teaching in about the first and second century under the Cappadocian Fathers. The gods created this earth and populated with mankind in a divine nursery that would grow up to be peers to them because they wanted that those relationships. Okay? And I realized as I was listening to that, as like I started thinking, looking again at the whole plan of salvation, and as it turns out, dang, it's all about relationships. It is all about relationships. So I realized that if you think about it, the great plan of salvation is designed at its core to reconcile us back to our heavenly parents. That's what it is. If the fall was a broken relationship. We fell out of, for a time, out of a relationship with our heavenly parents. And the whole plan of salvation is designed to bring us back into that covenant relationship back with them. that cool? That's really neat. So then I thought, well, you know what? That's true. So actually, the atonement of Jesus Christ is actually the means, it's the vehicle by which we're restored back to that relationship. When we fell, they said, well, then we'll give them a Savior, right? That will be able, through his death and resurrection, to bring us back into that relationship. God craves relationship with us. And may have grieved as much when we left as, you know, when we were separated from him. Isn't that cool? It's about wanting to restore that relationship back there. Okay? So if that's the case, really think about what happens. At baptism then, when we're baptized into the church, what happens is that, remember in the Book of Mormon, we were told that if you want to be baptized, what is it? What would be the keys to you being baptized in the Book of Mormon? If you desire to be baptized, then what?
Put down the whiskey.
Yes, that's right. Whiskey should go away.
Okay.
Yeah, Claw, you're hitting around it. If you're gonna be in relationship with Christ, you need to mourn with those that mourn, comfort those that stand in need of comfort, and stand as a witness of him at all times. Right?
Succor.
Yeah, and provide succor for them. That's right. Okay. So what happens at baptism, guys, is that we enter into a partnership with Christ. That's what we do. That baptism into the kingdom, we're being invited into a partnership with Christ to restore our relationship to our heavenly parents and to bring with us all those that we love. That's what we do. Okay? That's the whole goal. Okay? So far so good? I just thought, wow, it's all about relationships. That's cool. So, that critical work relies at its core on learning and cultivating healthy relationships. Part of coming to this earth is we have to learn how to develop relationships one with another. That's at the core of the gospel. Now, at the core of the gospel then is the ability to have productive relationships at critical moments. Does that make sense? A relationship builds on the idea that at certain points we can have a conversation that repairs things that maybe got in the way. Or we can bring up things that are causing us problems. Or we can deepen our relationship by having conversations. How important is it? Let me ask you something. Last time you went to the temple, look at what the very last thing in the endowment process is before you can enter into the presence of the Lord. What must you have at the very last moment? It's the last thing. What do you have? A conversation. The very last step is a conversation with God. Right? In that conversation, we're going to share the things that we've learned. Here's what I know. In that conversation, we're going to say, and here's what I don't know. And in that conversation, God is going to tell us what we didn't know. He teaches us one last piece. Now we've got it. And once we have had that conversation, we've learned what we needed to learn, then he goes, come on in. But the last thing we do is a conversation. It all hinges on that. Okay, I don't know if we always see it that way, but that's really where it is. Okay? So, let's talk for a minute about what a crucial, important conversation might be and what it is that I'm looking for, either in my office or in my life, those kind of things. Okay? Now, if you were to ask Sister Hinckley, she'd go, no, he doesn't really have this down very well. I still mess this up on a regular basis, okay? So what is a crucial, important conversation that lays the groundwork for a healthy relationship. Okay? And those moments are going to be when I recognize that there is a difference between me and somebody else, and there's emotion attached to it, and there's high stakes involved. Now, come on. What's happening on Tuesday?
Inauguration.
Okay, now, is there...
Monday
or Tuesday?
Monday.
It depends on the weather.
I think it's because of the weather they moved in the Capitol.
Okay. Now, is there anything more polarizing in the country than politics?
No.
Other than depending, sometimes the church can be that polarizing force, depending on which side you look at it. We live, and if I go on my Google page and you go on your Google page, are we going to have the same? And we put anything from, I don't know, chocolate cake. I Google chocolate cake. You Google chocolate cake. Are we going to have the same stuff come up? No. Why?
Algorithms,
right? And what's the algorithms designed to do? Feed us our opinions. And not feed us different opinions. Because if they're feeding us our opinions, then we'll follow it and we'll do more clicks. In other words, the whole thing is set up to keep us in our track, to keep us in our tribe. Don't put us in somewhere other tribe. We're going to have to be... So that means that part of polarization is that there is me and there's you. I'm a me, you're a other. You're the other people. And I'm going to look for code words that says, oh, you're one of them's versus one of me's.
Is that because of the differences?
Each tribe has its language. If somebody walks in and they go, is this the LDS church?
No.
You go, but you'd say, okay, is this the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Yeah. Or somebody comes in and goes, I'm looking for the Mormons. What does that mean? They're them. Yes. Right now, you know what shibboleth is? A shibboleth is a word that says, I can tell which tribe you're in. If somebody comes in and goes, I think I'm Mormon, you'd go, oh, you're them. I think I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Oh, you're us. That term has been turned into a shibboleth. It just tells us which tribe we're in. Now, that means that if I am Trumper and I have to talk to Never Trumper, there might be a difference of opinion. There might be emotionality attached to that. And it could be high stakes if we're working together or, you know, you married into my family or something like that. Think about how many fun Thanksgivings happened in this last November. And how many topics were off the table if we wanted to get through dinner without everybody being at each other's throats.
Wouldn't go right to fun.
It probably was not fun. Then we started throwing turkeys, and then it devolved after that, right? So a crucial conversation in the building of a relationship is the ability to have the hard conversations. Relationships that struggle can't have difficult conversations without it devolving into an argument, and we're throwing things and slamming doors and silence or blaming or whatever. And we'll talk about some of that.
Or okay. A browbeating
session. It could be a browbeating session. It could be a I'm going to tell you what you think session.
I'm going to tell you what you've been doing wrong.
I will do that. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here, why do we do this? If we're going to have healthy conversations that lead to healthy relationships, we've got to understand what drives us. So here's kind of how this works. We're first of all going to start off with what we have seen and what we hear. It's just objective. You said this or you didn't say this. You were sitting there or you weren't sitting here. You came or you went. Okay? There's no dispute that you guys came here tonight. Were you here tonight? Yeah, we were here. Okay. That I know. Okay? So I'm going to start with what was actually observed. But here's where it gets weird. And it gets weird fast. I'm going to start with what I saw, but then almost immediately I spin a story around that. Okay? So for instance, let's say that I asked Elise to do something for me in the office. Okay? And I come back an hour later, and there she sits. Okay? Now, what if the story I'm telling about Elise is, I think she's kind of lazy. That is going to trigger, and that's my narrative, that's going to trigger a different response than if I like, oh, wait a minute, I know that she told me earlier that she'd been up all night long, and I'm seeing her sitting there, what's my story? She's just tired. She's sleepy. What if I asked somebody to, let's say I asked you, I need you to remember, you didn't remember my birthday.
Nope.
You forgot my birthday. Now, if my narrative is that you really don't care, that's why you didn't remember my birthday and didn't say anything, I feel one way. What if my narrative is, oh, by the way, turns out she's got Alzheimer's? Completely, you still forgot my birthday, but the feeling, the emotion is different.
Yeah.
The emotion is tied to the story we tell. Does that make sense?
Your personal emotion, not the emotion of the other person.
Well, right. At least to start with.
Yeah.
At least, we'll get there. Okay, so that means that, isn't it interesting that my emotion is not necessarily tied to whether you remembered my birthday or not? My emotion is tied to what?
Why?
Why you forgot my birthday. What story, what narrative I'm telling. I always suspected she didn't care about me anyway, so that's probably why exactly she didn't do that. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, poor thing, I probably can't even remember what she had for breakfast, you know. Is whatever story I wrap that event in determines what I feel. Okay, we on board? Okay, now, so the emotional response is actually to our stories. So what that means is that when I feel something, I don't care whether it's anger or joy or whatever, and I have an emotion, I respond to my emotion. I'm going to do something. Something. Now, on one side, I can either act out, and my emotions are going to be more external. You remembered my birthday. Yay! You know, thank you so much. I'm happier, okay? Or, so sometimes the emotions go out, like I get mad, or I get upset, or I'm crying, or I'm yelling. There's a certain basketball game going on tonight that I will probably be interested in after we get done here. If you're a BYU or Utah fan, this has some salience tonight. They're playing. Okay? Now, but what I can also take those emotions and I can do what?
Internalize.
Stuff them. Shove them down. So maybe my feelings are hurt that you forgot my birthday, but I go, oh, it's okay. I'm fine.
We just figured at your age you didn't want to remember.
Yeah, that's a great story. She's being kind. She's not reminding me of my birthday. You know? But so we don't say anything. We shut it down. We bury it. Okay? Now, here's the weird thing about buried emotions. Do they stay buried?
No.
Oh, heck no.
No.
Oh, heck no. It's like taking a smelly carcass and putting it in the closet and shutting the door. It's gone. And what happens, like, in the hours later, you start going, something died. And the smell or something like that, it just reeks out. So anything that I stuff internally, ultimately I will act out. Yeah.
I have a friend who will tell me, I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you. And I have learned that when she says, I'm not mad at you, it means...
She's mad at you. Isn't that true? It could be that I'm not mad at you, but she won't return your phone calls. I'm not mad at you, but she just doesn't smile, or now she isolates, or now she... Are you sure you're not? I'm fine. I'm really not. But I'm not telling you. We're not having the conversation to resolve
that. Well, she tells me the exact opposite of what she's actually feeling. And so I have now known her long enough that I know that it means the opposite of what she's saying.
Yeah, you've learned over time. Yeah, true. And that's what we do. We stuff it. It doesn't stay stuffed. So one of the things that I'm trying to say here then, how important a conversation is, because the goal of being able to have tough conversations or growth conversations or deeper conversations with friends or family or spouse or something like that is that ability then to be able to choose to have a healthy conversation when it's crucial, when there's emotion, when there's a difference of opinion, high stakes, I've got to be able to have the conversation that we don't always want to have. Okay? All right. So how are we going to do that? Well, real quickly, we're going to find out that you're not going to have a healthy conversation unless there's a safe setting. Each one's going to own their own opinions and actions. And we agree on goals and plans. This is the fast version of it. But let me roll to the next thing here. So if we're going to resolve it, let's talk about what a safe setting would be. If I'm going to have a hard conversation with somebody, what would constitute safe?
Like no distractions?
First of all, you want to make sure there's no distractions. Yeah. It is interesting at times when I'm trying to have a conversation with a young mother in my office, and she happens to bring her toddler. And the toddler's busy running around tearing stuff up, and she's so distracted that she can't really deal with her stuff. So we have to find something else. Yeah.
Neutral territory.
It needs to be neutral. Yeah. So I'm safe enough. I feel like I can do that. I think that one. What else?
No weapons.
No weapons. Yeah.
On the neutral territory, would that, if the issue was a more of a one-sided issue?
Yeah.
Would neutral territory then be more sort of like me, like I was having a problem with you, and it's my problem, so I want to meet you on your turf. That way, you're feeling more comfortable when I speak, maybe, and gives me a little bit more flexibility.
It's whatever it is that it causes you to kind of drop your walls a little bit, and whatever it causes me to drop my walls, so that we're able to talk.
I was kind of implying like more like if it was 100% me having the issue and I needed to clear it up or whatever.
And you're going to come to me and we're going to do it.
You being more neutral would be more of a better.
It's a safer, yeah. It's whatever drops your walls. In other words, it's safe enough to lower the shields, so to speak. Okay? So one of them is timing. If you're going to try and have a crucial conversation with somebody, I would recommend not later than 11 o'clock.
Or right after work at 6.
Right when you're hungry. Yes, absolutely. It's amazing how many unproductive conversations, we call them arguments, happen between people who start having a crucial conversation at 11 and at 2 o'clock as they've been yelling for 3 hours and nothing is resolved and they know they got to get up at 6 the next morning to go ahead and go to work, that nothing productive happened during those 3 hours other than we're both hoarse and we both said a lot of things that we wish we hadn't have said that we will remember later. And then we've had a crucial conversation in the past that still stings us every time we think about it.
You do this with your married couples as well?
Sometimes this happens with married couples.
Sometimes. 22 years, it happens every week.
I've got a couple I've worked with for years, and this conversation always goes between, you don't listen to me, I need more help from you, I did the dishes, I put the kids to bed, but you're not listening to me, but I did the dishes, but you're not listening to me, and we go, and the walls are up.
Yep.
You know? Call the Enterprise and tell them to drop the shields, because nothing's getting through here. Okay? All right, so timing is important. Lower emotions. If you're feeling flushed and you're feeling angry or you're super hurt, now probably ain't the time. It just is, it's just not a good time to try and have these kind of tender, open conversations. Which is really bad. Sometimes you're trying to have a relationship or a conversation with somebody that wants it resolved right now. And they're going to follow you around until they get it figured out. And they just won't let it go. Because, okay, nothing good's happening at that point. It just won't. So it has to be a way to lower the emotions. It has to be. Now, the difference, I think, is the difference between being able to, When we're not doing those things, we're going to be critical. There's an amazing little thing that happens if you and I are having a conversation, Elise, and instead of being critical of you, I'm being curious. Because now I'm curious. I'm asking questions. I honestly want to know. It's amazing what curiosity does in terms of turning down criticism when I really am asking a question I don't know. I would really like to know why it is that my teenage son threw a ball through the window. I can come in and be critical, or I can go, I would really like to know what you were thinking. Oh, it turns out you weren't really thinking. Okay. I'm really curious then, what is your plan of action to be able to pay for the new window? And we can have a curious conversation about resolving our problem. Okay? But curiosity seems to be, if I could point to one thing, man, it seems to be curiosity. Also a warm face and voice.
Would a smile be okay?
Oh, yeah. A smile is a good start. And by the way, gentlemen, I need you to listen to this. This is one of those, it's one of those crucial differences between men and women. As men, and it's not universal, but it's pretty dang close. The way our brain is set up, we have a narrow corpus callosum. Our limbic system is a little bit narrower. We are built for doing a task, and it means that we can concentrate on one thing, period. Unless we're ADD, and then we concentrate on a lot of things. But we're good at concentrating on one thing. That means that we read one cue from you. She's smiling. We're in good territory. She said, fine, I can go do, okay.
Fine.
We're in good territory. She said fine. And I will, by the way, I'll parrot it back to you. You said it was okay.
Then it's on
the guys are like, what?
Then it's on the woman, because as a woman and
yeah,
as a man, especially as women, we need to voice our needs, our wants and opinions.
Yes, and when we go back to what is it that you saw and heard, the problem is that the female brain, let me come back to you, the female brain is set up, it has a deep emotional limbic system, it's bigger. The corpus callosum, the separation between the hemispheres in the brain, we have guys, well, ladies, as guys we have like a drawbridge. It's a little narrow thing between our hemispheres. As women, you have an 8-lane freeway. And information goes back and forth. So you're reading my face, my voice, my body actions to things. You're looking at the context. You're looking at all of these things. And it's like massive amounts of data and factors and inputs are all flowing in at the same time to give you that thing. And sometimes you're wrong. No. Okay. But you're trying to sort through a lot of information, and we're simply going, she said fine. She said it was okay. I'm gonna operate on my one piece of data. Okay? So, okay, now.
obviously, just like we picked on that side of it, so to pick on their flip side of it real quick. Is this the same time when a guy tries to solve the problem instead of just hearing and being curious about the problem? You come home from work and the significant other has had a bad day and you don't listen about Jane and June and Sally who work, right? So we try to solve their problem instead of just listening to the problem.
Because that's our story, right? That's our narrative. Me, fixer. Me, fix. She unhappy, I will fix. And rather than be curious and find out what's going on and what's really needed, we're going to jump a lot of times to that stage that says, that's what I do, it will be better. You're not listening to me. I did the dishes. That is the solution to that. No, what I was needing for you to listen to me. I put the kids to bed. That was nice, but you didn't listen to me. I did. Okay. And we go round and round and round.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So what we're trying to do when we're trying to resolve this is that we've got to actually somehow find a way to suspend our story and labeling in terms of being curious. I'm going to quit trying to tell a story and find out what you tell me the story is. Yeah.
So what are good questions to jar the curiosity?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. Hold on to that for just a sec, okay? Because there's going to be one thing that you need to do first. Yes. You've been down this road before, haven't you?
Maybe once. Sorry, I was wrong.
Yeah, if we're bouncing over, here's what I saw and heard, then I first of all got to be aware of what my emotion is and own it. In that moment, I felt anger or I was scared or I was whatever, remembering that this emotion is flowing from that story, but that ability to say, you know what, it might be that I'm genuinely confused. I don't know. I felt confused, or I felt hurt, or I felt, in a safe setting, it's okay for us to say I'm hurting. If it's not a safe setting, we're not going to put that out there. We'll get stomped on. Okay? Because then the next one is that we have to own what we did with that emotion. Because I didn't know, I felt hurt, so actually I just shut down and I went in the other room and I've just been ignoring you for the last 3 hours. And it probably wasn't helpful. So you're right. We have to, first of all, one of the ways that I bring your walls down a little bit is I start by owning my stuff. It's called mirroring. If I can start owning my stuff, you are more likely to own your stuff. So if I can say, I probably shouldn't have done that, you are much more likely to do what? Well, I probably shouldn't have done mine. That's how the walls come down, is we start by owning ours, they own theirs. Does that make sense? Okay. That's what I had. Yeah.
I think if we go back to what I saw or heard, we need to make sure that what we saw and heard was actually what the other person had intended. So a lot of times we have thinking errors, some part in there, or some kind of miscommunication. And so you need to go back to the other person and be like,
yep.
This is what I heard. Was that what you intended?
Yes. Isn't that great? Because that just says, here's what I saw, and because of that I was feeling nervous or I was feeling confused, and so I really would like to know what it is that you were thinking and what you were hoping would, tell me what was going on.
Because otherwise you just go down this runaway train, when the real error was way back.
Oh, yeah. And it was actually generally back in the story about, I'm just going to assume that you don't like me. Mm-hmm. Or I just assume you want to control me. Or I'm just going to assume that, and then we've already spun the narrative and we work off of that narrative. And until we get the conversation, we don't know. We hang on to it. We don't have any other information about that. So that's a great point. Yeah.
I've read somewhere that it's human nature to judge others on their actions, but ourselves on our intentions.
Isn't that true? But that action is also based on what I think that action was. What was the purpose behind that? We all know that Democrats hate the country, right? And we all know that Republicans hate the poor. So I'm going to work off of that narrative. I'm going to work off of that narrative. And then I'm going to make all the assumptions based on when you tell me who you voted for. Now I have a set of assumptions. Who you hate, here's how you don't like, here's what needs to happen, blah, 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 blah. And it just lays out. So I can't even have a conversation with you because you're so hateful. Okay? Yeah. All right? But if I can at least own my part, I pulled back from you, and that probably wasn't fair. I made some assumptions without asking you what you thought. Okay, well, good. Then that opens up that dialogue, okay? Because then the next part is we're just going to listen. And we have to listen without interrupting. Mm-hmm. We have to listen without interrogating. There is nothing better to ruin a relationship or a conversation than to flip into defense attorney mode and just go, so when we were at the restaurant, what did you tell that waiter? And what did you do this? And then what did I do? And then when, you know, because I already know the answer, and my job as an attorney is to not ask you questions I don't already know the answer to. So when we did that, why did you do that? And then did you go outside? Well, of course you went outside. You know, and now you're like, okay, turn on the light bulb. I'm being interrogated, and the walls are back up. Okay, yeah.
Actually, that's a very valid point. So I was spent 12 years in the military as an interrogator.
And am I right?
I've sat in on many interrogations where they had to be translated, or you know, I did them myself. You know, and so I look. Facial cues, mouths.
Yeah, you learn to expand what you're looking for.
When I meet somebody for the first time, I actually avoid eye contact. I avoid.
So that you can hear.
I do the opposite, right? Because they're wanting me to make that connection. I'm assuming, right? I'm assuming you want that eye-to-eye contact. You want to always listening to me. Like if I go talk to the bishop, I'm, you know, I got my head down. Because I want to hear them. And not judge his face and how it looks and what I've been trained to do.
Did you guys just get the story? Mm-hmm. Isn't that awesome? If you're gonna, what's your name again?
Preston.
If you're going out with him, and your assumption and your narrative is he doesn't look at me, he doesn't make eye contact. What's wrong with him? But now you have a piece to go with that that says by not looking at you, he's actually trying to listen to you and not get distracted by the other cues, right?
Because I can't stop looking at him. Watching a TV show or a movie, like actors and stuff, I'll be like, they're like, oh, Tom Cruise is just the greatest actor ever, and I'm like, no, his mouth goes like this when he says that, and I'm like, so I judge that. You know?
I'll bet
so
you.
To
I'll,
go back to the beginning.
You'd be fun on a date, wouldn't you?
It's like I almost need to put my eyes out.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like there's a second part to that listen, because if it's a one-sided conversation or a lecture, I mean, there's no interrupting and noticing, but there's got to be an end to it or a breath.
Yeah, that's right. Well, because ultimately the whole goal here is that if I can do things that, and I can be honest, and I bring my walls down, you bring your walls down. Now we can put a plan together about, let's try not to do this anymore, or let's do this differently, or something like that. That's, to me, that's the goal. We're walking out of this conversation, we're both on the same page. Does that make sense? Because otherwise it's just open-ended, and it just doesn't go anywhere. Okay? All right.
Would you say that the agreement needs to be like enthusiastic between the two people? Because one person could be like, this is what we're going to do.
And the others back go, okay, yeah, we'll do that. I don't think I want to do that, but I'm not going to tell you that. Because I've been a people pleaser for a long time, and if that's what you want, I won't say anything. But I won't get around to it. I will just be passively following along, and then I won't follow through. Okay, you're right. Okay. All right, so let me add one more layer to this, and then maybe we can throw it over to some questions and discussion on this a bit. I think you guys had a good fireside the other night a while back on personality types, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my overly simplistic thing that's not nearly as good as what you guys did. But it's one of those things that I think when we're looking at trying to develop relationships with people, we need to know who we're having a relationship with. Okay? So, first group. These are frienders. And you know who you are. That friends are everything to you. And connections with friends are super important. And you cultivate that relationship. Now, I don't know if you're one of those that has just a handful of friends. One of my clients is up at school, up at BYU, and we're having this conversation. And he's been up there now for, a whole semester. But his friends are back home. They're here. So he's not having friends. He's not creating friends up there because they're going to go away. He's going to go on a mission. His friends are here. So there's no need to invest in any friends up there because his friends are here. I said, well, what about you might be missing on some friendship opportunities here? Yeah, but that's a risk. I know who my friends are, and I can share some things. And ultimately, it's funny with this guy. I actually got back, and it's like, okay, it turns out that if he puts himself out there, and it turns out that they're not into Dungeons and Dragons and Tolkien and superheroes, they're probably not going to like him. So rather than put that out there, I'm just going to keep that to myself, and I will have some really lonely Friday nights and wait till I get home with my friends. Yeah, but you're going on a mission. You're going to have it. I know they're going to find out that. I know. So we're trying to work on how do you open up a little bit with friends. But he's a friender.
So your thinking would be better approach to find other D&D enthusiasts and roll the dice?
That, and assume that role, yeah. Guys, don't get him started. If you turn the key in this man, I'll just say that. You'll run into a superhero friend. Okay, anyway, so there are frienders. There are doers. Okay? They like to be doing. They like to be achieving. Sitting around the house drives them nuts. They like to be able to get awards and certificates and have accomplished stuff and go places and do things. And it just drives them nuts if they're not doing all those kind of stuff. And don't spend a lot of time talking to me. Give me a 10-minute talk and the bottom line. And let's go, man. Let's just do this thing. Okay? They're doers. Okay? Then we have the thinkers. Thinkers like ideas. Thinkers tear stuff apart and never really put them back together again. You can tell that you're in the presence of a thinker, just sit in their car or go in their bedroom. There's no organization there at all. It's just, and they're looking and thinking and talking big ideas and big, you know, they like to think, they like to get into things and talk about stuff, okay? And, by the way, if you're wanting to have a crucial conversation with a thinker, you're going to say, can we do this? And they're going to say, can you give me the night to think about it? I've got to decide if I'm really ready to have that kind of openness. I'll think about it. Because they won't make fast decisions. Because they're going to think it through. But it will be well thought through. Okay? And then finally, we have the organizers. Okay? Organizers love to coordinate, plan, organize. In any company, these are the people that secretly run the company. They know where all the bodies are buried. They know where to how to cash the checks. They know who's dumb and who's not, because they're attuned to the organization. Okay? A few years ago, I had a group that I was taking to Israel, and I had a lady that called me 90 days before we went. No, it was 6 months before we went. 6 months. And she said, I got a question. I said, what? And she goes, I noticed that on day 5, we're in Nazareth, and we're going to do this thing. Will I be able to leave my coat on the bus? We're 6 months away. I was, yeah, you'll be able to do that. Oh, good. Well, now she could, you know, because he was emotionally worried, could she leave that? Wow. Okay. But for when they're organizing their life and they're looking at it, they want to go through all the things, and it causes a lot of anxiety and stuff like that. Let me ask, if you're going to, so these are the type of people. Now, yes, are there different shades of, are there subgroups of this, are there combinations of, yeah. But just in general, tell me which groups, which two might have a hard time having a crucial conversation to resolve a doers and what? Yeah, why?
Because one wants fast action, the other one wants to ponder it.
Just do it. I'm not moving that fast. You can do that. These guys, in any organization, these guys are driven nuts by these guys.
That's human resources.
This is human resources. Is that here or that here? You put them over, more over here? Okay, they got to think through all of the ramifications and all that. Give me 2 days and I'll get back to you.
Human roadblock.
Human roadblock. Yeah, that's good. That's HR. Okay, any other groups that might have crucial conversation difficulties?
Maybe organizers, because they want things a certain way. And when we have conversations, most of the time they're messy and they go all over the place.
So what's a friend? Or they just make friends and don't really do? I didn't understand.
A friend. Okay. It's hitting you. Who is he? Thank you.
He's not a friend.
I said, because that happened. By the way, I did that once with a Relief Society group. I said, I went through these groups and I said, okay, I want frienders and doers, and you're going to get up and go to your corner. I want frienders over here. I want thinkers over here. I want doers over here. And I want organizers over here. And I had 4 ladies that came up to me. Everybody else went to their corners. There was one corner that was empty. And I had 4 ladies coming up to me, and they were like, we need more information.
Just go over there.
That's what I did. I said, guys, here's your thinkers. Go to your corner. Because you would do that. You'd say, okay, I want to make sure. Let me get a little more data so that I can understand who is who. The answer to that, really, I think, in any like an organization, they're your salespeople. They like to sell. They like to go contact people. They like to get out there. These guys, on a Friday night, and they've had a long week, how do they regenerate? They go out with their friends.
Yeah.
On a Friday night after a long week, where do these guys go?
Home.
Maybe.
Because they are they're researching 4th century, you know, knife adorations or something like that. Okay, organizers may go home and redo their closet.
Well, I was going to say, I'm with him, and the frienders thing was a little unclear. I understand it better when you say they're the relationship people, but when you threw out the D&D guy as being a frienders,
That's what threw me off. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of it is interesting. The D&D guys tend to be over here because they like to think through things. But it's interesting that you can't do D&D on your own. So you've got to reach out. We're going to have some kind of organization, but it's got to be based on these things. And we may not be too big of friends outside of that, but we're in a normal range. Yeah.
It's also the same concept with thinkers and doers. Like, I'm a doer at my career and my job, and I make decisions very quickly.
Right.
But that's because I was a thinker before and trust that part of my...
Ah, okay, yeah.
I'm not there. Friendly, I have that part, not as much, but I wouldn't be so confident in my doing decisions at work if I wasn't a thinker and have thought through that process.
Yeah, and again, there's secondary things, and I'm oversimplifying this for sure. But for the purpose of what we're trying to do, where we're talking about relationships, I need you to see that even in the process of trying to recognize that If I want to have a healthy relationship, I've got to be able to have healthy conversations. And I'm going to be dealing with somebody that might be see things differently than I do. But if we're curious and we're asking questions, I honestly want to know how you see this. I honestly want to know, what is it like after a long day to then go to the library and study 4th-century swords? I'm curious to know what that does for you. I just want to know.
And what's your suggestion to not fall asleep during that conversation?
Make it till you make it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's ask the audience, shall we? Because in some of these cases, if you're somebody. There have been at least two brethren that I know, members of the Quorum of the Twelve, one a president of the church, who said, any two people that are just living the gospel should be able to get married and do just fine.
Gordon B.
Mm-hmm. I was one of them. Uncle Gordon, yes. Okay. Now, do you guys believe that?
No,
neither. Part of it is this, because you're right. There would, if I try to have a thinker and a doer marry one another, oh my gosh! I mean, those are going to be there's a lot of roadblocks you've got to get through to that. Where if you've got people that a lot of times you can, some of these others are a little bit more compatible. But yeah,
I think I would describe that statement as true insofar as dedication to the gospel is concerned, but incomplete so far as surviving in life.
Yeah, it's just going to make a rough life. So, for instance, I tease. Where's Cindy at?
I'm right here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. This dear woman is a native Texan. She grew up in East Texas, out in Sulphur Springs. Actually, outside of Sulphur Springs.
In the country.
Okay, now, if you are born and raised in East Texas, how long does it take to tell a story?
All day.
All day.
Wow. Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. So sometimes it's not just thinker, it's just cultural that says I've got to go. And so sometimes that crucial conversation is, can we shorten this just a little bit? Well, no, we're leaving out all of the important parts here. And we won't even get started on ADD. You know, squirrel. I'm going to try and squirrel. And then what about squirrel? Okay, where was I? Okay.
What are you saying?
that you have gotten much better at being able to tell a succinct story.
Just know you're
going to
be talking about this later.
You're saying there will be a crucial conversation on the way home? Okay, I'm going to start now. I am so sorry. or walking, whichever may have. That's true. That's really true. Yeah.
Some questions. So if you're finally at one of these points where you're doing this and just not getting anywhere, would it be helpful for a moment, whichever party, to go over the other side of the fence, try to see things from their point of view,
yeah,
get information, and then come back over? Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but at least it gives you some insight into whether...
Yeah, and again, I think that's perfect, because part of that curiosity is, I really do want to know what was driving you and all that, because I really need to know. Because if I do that, then part of the plans is, then I need to be more careful about this, or I need to make sure.
It's tough to do, because it makes you feel like, well, I'm giving in because I'm over here. But the more information you have, the better.
Yeah, the reality is that if you're married to a thinker, you might want to say, here's something I want to talk about. Let's talk about it tomorrow night. Where you've had, I've had with so many clients, I've said to them, they say, my husband won't talk to me. And I'll say, is he an attorney, a computer guy, an engineer, or an accountant? And they go, well, how did you know? Okay, whoever those guys are, if you got one of those you're trying to have a relationship with, send them an email. Here's some things we want to talk about. Give them 24 hours to think about it. And then you can have the discussion. Don't drop it on him and immediately want to drop into an emotional discussion with no run-up to that. Oh, okay. And guess what? It works. It works.
Maybe use words that they would use. Thinkers use different words than other
people. Yeah, they do. You saying that if you're with a friend, or it's like, dude.
Thinkers, well, I'm thinking, okay, well, here's something to think about.
Yeah, would you think about this, and then we can put a plan together, like, tomorrow night. Yeah.
I was just going to say, none of those personalities are better than another.
They aren't.
They all contribute in very wonderful and unique ways. And so I think part of it, too, as an individual, whether I'm a thinker or a friend or whatever, that I learn to appreciate those differences and want to leverage those differences.
No doubt.
And so I think that's a real challenge, but I think if you can get to that point, you can have doers and thinkers married, and it can be magical.
I worked in a company for a while was an R&D company with a lot of engineers. And we would sit over lunch and just thrash out the minor, they're all engineers. Nothing's really happening yet, but we're talking a lot. And we're thinking, and we're examining, and we're, you know. So if you have predominantly one personality, it really does trap you down something. You need all of those. Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot about how much God cares about us and how much we need to care about the people in our relationships. And when he wants to communicate to us, the scriptures are very clear. He talks in language that we can understand.
Yes.
But I think the important thing to remember there is this is dangerous. In a relationship, we both have to care enough to talk in language the other person understands. Not just you. If you're talking to someone in language they understand, they're continuing to act the same way. You have to decide if that's actually okay or not. But when we choose to do that, on some level it allows us to create better relationships because we're helping bridge the gap.
If you're Heavenly Father and you want to communicate something by the Spirit to a friend, or how would you do it?
By a friend.
Probably interaction with somebody. Okay. If I am, and probably more through a feeling and emotion that you might have about testimony. If I am Heavenly Father and I want to tell a thinker that the Book of Mormon is true, how do I do it? Have him read it, and? But the Holy Ghost will bear witness in what way? Less about emotion, more about common sense. It makes sense. It resonates. It's not so much the burning or anything like that. It's just, and in the same way, a doer, if I'm Heavenly Father and I'm going to communicate through the Holy Ghost to a doer and it hits, what happens? Let's get baptized next week. I got it. I don't have to thrash around in this thing any longer. Let's get it done now. Okay? It just, that language is adapted. I love that. He speaks to us in our own language, and I don't think he's talking about Spanish or French. He does do that too. But it's amazing how often that spirit is based on our personality and what's going on with us, for sure. I saw another hand.
Okay. That was a minute ago, but the gentleman down there said the point exactly. So I think my parents are polar opposites, and they have learned to communicate and have those conversations, and there's synergy there. Couldn't have had better parents.
Because they bring to the table this differences. I always try, and the scripture that I love in this regard, guys, is think about the Apostle Paul was preaching in Corinth, and what he had in Corinth it sits out on the Peloponnese Peninsula. That's where all the ships came in to Corinth, and they had Greek speakers, they had Roman speakers, they had slaves, they had there were a lot of women, they had a lot of wives and mothers who were Jewish that didn't speak any Greek, just Hebrew. There was just this incredibly diverse group of people, okay? And we're going to sit that group down in a small house church in Corinth to try and have a sacrament meeting. And I've got Hebrews and Jews and Greeks and Romans and slaves, and I've got all of this group. And then he's going to send them a letter. Look at what letter he sends to them. 1 Corinthians. Think about 1 Corinthians 12. 1 Corinthians 12 says, you know what? The eye can't say to the hand, I don't need you. The foot can't say to the ear, I don't need you. And then he uses the analogy, he says, we're all part of the body of Christ. That, because he says, and I think he says, if the body were all a hand, how could it walk, basically? Okay, that we need all of those different aspects. But in order to do that, we've got to get off of our polarized piece and recognize everybody's strength that they bring with their differences. So that, okay, and it's just critical. But I will, maybe I'll kind of wrap up with this, and then we'll see where we want to go from there. But there's a wonderful liberal thinker by the name of Jonathan Rauch. Rauch is at the, what institute did we decide he teaches at? Brookings. He's at the Brookings Institute in New York. And he was actually invited, because of some thinking he's been doing, he was invited out to BYU to actually speak at a forum. He spoke at a forum, okay? Let me tell you what Rauch said. He says, he gets up there and he goes, first of all, you need to know some things about me. He says, I am an East Coast liberal. I'm Jewish, I'm an atheist, I'm gay, my partner's sitting right there. Do I have your attention? And he says, and I'm here to tell you that Mormons are the answer. And I'm like, what? And he says, what your church is doing, especially like with geographical wards, is that you're in a setting where people that are different from each other have to get along, and they have to serve each other with people that they wouldn't have spent time with, that they never would have known otherwise, because they're stuck in this geographical thing, and they have to learn how to take care of one another. You guys are genius, and the world needs you. And he says, I hear your president, Nelson, saying you have to learn how to disagree better. And he's right. If we're going to solve the polarization, he says, we need Mormons to come help us. Because we are really polarized. How about that? In order to do that, I think we need to be honed in the ability to have good conversations with people that are different from us, but learn how to listen to one another and do it with lower emotions in a safe setting. Does that make sense? Okay.
And what was that name again?
Jonathan Rauch. Yeah, he's doing some great work. Questions?
Mike's been trying to get your attention, so.
Oh.
Oh, it's I was just going back to her question because you never answered her question about falling asleep. It goes back to curiosity.
It does go back to curiosity.
So if you're curious, that will give you the desire to learn more, which means you ask more questions and you're taking interest in what they're saying.
Beautiful.
Because if you're just focused on you, that's why you're falling asleep, because you're bored with them because they're not entertaining you.
Or they're not speaking to the things that are an issue for you.
I was purely
facetious. Thank you for that. That's probably even a better answer than I could have provided. Yeah.
I think it's important just to go along with what you're saying. Is it's not just to be curious, it's to be willing to be wrong. I mean, to be willing to actually see the way I was seeing.
I missed this.
So, that's what I find really fascinating about relationships is there's a real strong likelihood that the way someone else sees something is going to be really uplifting and rewarding and valuable to me if I see what they're seeing.
Yeah.
So I think if you have that mindset, being curious is almost going to happen.
I think it is. That's what, and I was thinking that earlier. The more I was going through this, that curious piece just seemed to be rising more and more because it seemed to open up more doors. I think a great point. Yeah.
Not just not be wrong, but also not worry about being right.
True.
Sometimes we talk about, would you rather be right or rather be happy? And there's a lot of people that would rather be right and miserable and then glory in that. So, yeah.
What happens when you're trying to communicate or have a relationship with someone who is irrational? Or, like maybe they have a mental disorder.
Oh.
Or narcissistic.
Well, let's not go down that one yet.
Like they're all often going to have thinking errors.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How do you interact? So I'm part of this other group in another city, and we regularly get together, and there's someone always there that always wants to stir the pot, and if you try to speak to that, then they have an outburst.
But you're saying they're not really kind of completely stable.
Right, but at the same time, we don't want to kick the feet out. But
right. The hard part is that sometimes, guys, we do all of this, and we do all of this, and we do all of this, and they choose not to respond to us. We've done everything that we could on our side. Some people are just going to be toxic enough that we can't have a relationship. It's harder in a group setting because we're somehow trying to figure out a way to approach somebody. But if the walls never come down or their defenses are so high, you're going to be really limited in what you can actually get accomplished.
Well, we just kind of just let them speak. Sometimes they overdominate the conversation or whatever, but we don't interact with them, and then we quit having the outburst, but at the same time...
At the cost of the ability to take up time. I think that's a group... Group dynamics are a whole different thing altogether. How do we confront somebody that is controlling a group? That's a hard one, because it takes some ability to confront some things that sometimes... We can talk. Let's talk after, because I think that's a critical one. Yeah.
Generally, when in that scenario, and then generally in the groups that I've been in, where there's been somebody that wanted to be dominant, there's some insecurity on their side.
For sure.
And I think maybe if you can figure out what that person's insecurity truly is,
yeah,
you might be able to hash down the irrationality of the conversation. Like my older brother's bipolar, treated bipolar.
Wow, yes.
But he has irrational moments.
Yeah.
So with him, it's not an hour or 2 hour break that I get to see him. If he's irrational, we can put it aside until...
This isn't a safe moment. Yeah. We're not in a good place.
That sounds completely different. But what I wanted to bring up was look for the insecurity of why that person feels like they have to be in control.
Yeah.
Because there's always a reason they have to be in control. And so in, like, even my background training, when I learned and interrogation especially too, was I had to give up all control and pretend the person I was interrogating was in charge.
Yeah.
To get what I wanted. And so I had to figure out their insecurities so I could push on those buttons.
Yeah.
or not push on those buttons. And so, for example, I was in the Middle East a lot, so the Quran, so a female can't hold it. So we would always wrap them up if a female was going to hand it to them. So that way we were honoring their tradition. And then that kind of broke their insecurity down with talking to a female.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I know it's a different situation. And you might only have an hour block or two block a week or whatever it is. But in my experience, somebody who wants to dominate, they're insecure about something.
Yeah, because you already know right up front, we're probably not. You probably can't have a healthy relationship with somebody that isn't willing to. So that's why I say it becomes a group dynamic. And groups can be really powerful to break it down, but they have to be ready to do it. So anyway, yeah.
Thinker in me is wondering if there was a tie-off between that early intro story about, was it the Maxwell Institute?
Uh-huh.
What do you call that, early years?
The Cappadocian Fathers?
Cappadocian Fathers, yeah. You started in with that, but did we finish the...
just the fact that with the Cappadocian Fathers, they understood at a very early stage, actually even better than Augustine did in the 4th century, that God was about relationships, that God craved relationships. I think that Elder Kiron is pushing on the same button when he says, God is relentless in his pursuit of you. That relationships become the core of everything we do into the eternities. And so part of what we do in mortality is learn how to have healthy relationships, was kind of where I was going with that. That they understood God wanted a relationship with us. And they understood it instinctively, yeah.
So what are some good questions to help break stories?
Ah, good. That's a good one. If we're trying, to ourselves or to somebody else?
When I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody, I have a story in my head.
Yeah.
How do I ask questions to find falsehoods in my stories?
Ask questions to them or to yourself?
Probably to them, because I'm probably just going to assume that my story is correct. So how do you
that dynamic in
yourself?
Yeah, what you're actually doing, you guys hear what he's saying? Is that, by the way, how do you know that a story is in play?
As soon as you give it meaning.
How are you going to know, though?
Emotion.
Yes.
Emotion.
Yeah. In other words, part of what you're trying to do, for me, emotions are a little bit like the gauges on your car. You could look at your fuel gauge and go, is that good or bad? You go, well, it's neither good or bad, but it's given me information about what's going on in my life. If you find yourself angry, I'm trying to have a conversation, a relationship with somebody, and what I'm feeling primarily is angry. Now the curiosity kicks in. It's like, what story am I telling myself that's leading me to be angry? Or I had this conversation with him and I've been anxious for the last couple of hours. What story am I telling myself that's leading me to be anxious? So what is that story? Because you might be saying, well, it didn't bother me, but you've been churned up all night. You're going, no, apparently it did bother me. What is there about that? And sometimes you can get to that yourself if you start asking, what is it that tripped the emotion? Sometimes in these conversations, though, it's like, can I get your help on something? You know, I found myself kind of getting angry, and I don't know what that's about. And I want to get some, what do you think? You've gotten to know me a little bit. What do you think? And sometimes we invite people in, if it's safe, to say, here's what I wonder, here's what I'm looking at. But I think more than anything, we really want to, because a lot of times, guys, these stories that we tell can also be, if you have any kind of trauma, I don't want to go down this road too far, but if you have any kind of trauma in your life, 80% of this may be unconscious. The conversation seemed to be safe. There wasn't anything really big here, but man, I'm angry tonight. And we can have some kind of emotional flashback that is hitting us from years ago that is flooding over us, right? Yeah, go ahead. Please, yeah, you work with this.
Yeah. So we were having a group discussion literally yesterday about this. Somebody said, I've been out on 2 dates with somebody over the last couple of weeks, and they took 6 hours to answer my text. so they're not interested, and...
I already got this, right?
Yeah, they're not interested. What should I do?
I'm now dealing with the fact that they're not interested.
And some of the people are just like, dump them, leave, go on. And I'm like, did you ask them what the situation was? Like, I'm sorry, but if I, you know, I have a career where I have back-to-back appointments, and I didn't plan for you to come into my life, and now you're suddenly in my life. Okay, now I need to build some time into that so that, you know, we can reciprocate or whatever, this ongoing communication. But just because I'm not in the same headspace you're at doesn't mean I'm not interested, and let's have a conversation about it. But the story they're telling themselves is, oh, they're not interested. Oh, it's a red flag. Now everybody run. If somebody doesn't respond within 4 hours, then, oh, they're not relationship material.
I think that's a perfect example. Because if you're going to say, okay, you know what? When I texted you and it took you 6 hours to get back, I found myself feeling anxious. I might have overreacted. I don't know, but it left me wondering. I wasn't quite sure, and so I really kind of want to know. And so I don't want to overreact. So can you maybe tell me what was going on? And it could be, you know, it could be very much like, well, I didn't know what to say or something, but I think that's a great lead-in to say, for sure, you didn't get back after 6 hours. I just want to know what's going on. Help me know. Yeah?
I just want to point out, much like your Google example, where the filters or the algorithm is feeding information, there's feedback loops in some of these forums that are pouncing and saying, leave them right away, or they're not worth it.
You need to dump that guy.
Based on their own trauma, their own experience, before they had that crucial conversation. And I think, because we had something recent, that it was...
Yeah.
It's very common.
It is. And the feedback loop, that's really a good example, kind of the Google confirmation coming from all over places. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. This is about relationships, not group dynamics, as you said. There are no other people in this loop. That's not to say that you can't talk to other people, but when people ask to talk to me, I am not saying I do this well, but help them understand what they're thinking. Tell them what I think they should do, because what I think has nothing to do with it.
You mean that if you're not quite sure, you don't immediately call your sister and four of their friends to try and get their feedback?
I do, but I don't. I don't let them. They don't get to decide what my story is or how I feel or why.
Thank
I
you. Absolutely. And we do have a tendency to do that, especially when we are struggling, or let's say that we're feeling angry or something like that, and we're looking for justification out there. I think Google is a really good parallel to that, to just say, why would they not get back to me? Well, they're probably a narcissist. Oh, okay, well, then that explains that. We cut to the chase, and now we know, so dump him and move on. Okay, yeah?
And I think it's well to remember that when you've got feedback, say, in an audio system, it's usually not very pleasant. So,
it is kind of a screechy kind of, yeah.
So proceed with caution.
I think that's true.
You're also going to look at, too, like with the double dynamic, right? Sometimes somebody's a talker and somebody's a listener. And sometimes I'll say, my mom and dad have been married over 50 years, and they're polar opposites. My dad speaks maybe 4 sentences a day, but they're very powerful. But my mom will talk 24/7, and it means nothing. And you know, it is. You know, that, you know, you know what I mean. She'll talk about the glasses and this crazy you see yesterday.
Is she from East Texas?
Actually, East Georgia. So.
Anybody driving down to Plano tonight that I can get a ride with? I agree.
She'll talk like the grass is as green as it was yesterday, or that rock is moved, or you know what I mean? Like,
she's observing, she's just talking.
Everything. She likes talking about all her observations, which are important to her.
Yes.
And that's great. But like my dad will listen. And he will hear all that, and he can repeat it back, but at the same time, he'll just say 3 or 4 words. Like if you want to put it to texting or having a conversation, if you call my dad and ask him a question, he's going to give you a very dour answer.
A very guy-like thing, like, Exclamation point.
And then
my LOL.
Mom, a very thinker answer, like, you answer, hey, do you have any Kohl's cash? I'm about to go to Kohl's and use my gift card you got me for Christmas. You got any Kohl's cash that I can add to it? And then it turns into a 3-hour conversation about buying fertilizer at Home Depot. And, you know, and so it's important to her if you want it to be important. So what I'm saying, what I'm asking is, or in saying at the same time, is that sometimes those polar opposites work very well together. Because they, if the talker and the non-talker realize that the other person is really still hearing them and listening, that, you know, it
yeah. applies. And if feelings get hurt, can they talk about it and right. resolve it? Heidi?
I could just interject a couple of things. First is, believe in the positive intention of others before you get it resolved.
I like that. I like that.
They are not your enemy. And a lot of times we're like, oh, you know, we get defensive. And really,
yes, yeah, yeah.
Emotions. Even if you're telling yourself the story, just be like, I could be telling myself this story, but there could be other alternatives as well that I'm not considering. And just keep yourself open to that. Most people are not intentionally trying to be rude, or most people have, it's, I'm busy, I'm unaware, yeah. I'm not recognizing I'm even doing this. I had a friend once, he sent me like 45 minutes worth of voice messages on Messenger once.
What?
And wow. I had clients all day, and I was listening to it intermittently throughout, and I think it took me 2 days to finally listen yeah. to everything. And then by day 3, when I was getting ready to respond, because I'm a thinker, and I wanted to respond.
Had to give it some thought, absolutely.
He had given to send me messages. He's like, well, clearly, you know, I spent an hour recording all this, and you can't even say thank you. And so I'm just...
So there was already a narrative in place that he was working off of, right?
I was just like, oh, my gosh. Thankfully, I have his phone number, and I just texted him. I said, you're right. I should have said, I'm busy right now. I want to give this thought. I want to give this consideration. You're right. I should have handled that differently. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to
Perfect.
Offend you. I wanted to give you the same.
So in the future, if I take a couple of days to get back to you, I'm not ignoring you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking up a response. Yeah.
Also, I'll try to at least say thank you. I'll be getting back to you.
Yeah, it's a good plan. It's a good plan.
You know, but, yeah, just believing in the positive.
I like that.
When you worry, just pray about it before you pray.
I think that's a great way to do it. Sometimes you pray about it and get the right spirit, then that can help as well. Okay. Is that plenty? We got lots and lots. Thanks, guys. This has been fun. I'll turn time back to.
But it's great to have this conversation and discussion.
Good conversation.
Here. And he's going to need a ride home tonight.
So, what if I sit over here?
The story and it's great this group we had tonight, the communication we had. I got to say that. We get into these discussions like this, and it leads us into our own hearts and minds thinking about a lot of things. And one of the things I'm grateful for, what I look for, is I go to the temple. In the many years that I was single.
And thank you for joining us for another Monday morning class. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions about future topics that we could discuss, or if you had any questions concerning something that you heard in the class, please drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you. As always, if you happen to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, please come in and join us on a Monday morning. We'd love to see you and identify who you are. If the podcast itself is resonating with you, go ahead and click subscribe so that Apple can figure out where we are. We'd love to hear from you. So again, thank you for coming, and we'll see you for another Monday morning class.